the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Yes, hello folks, welcome to Beyond the Pitch. I'm your host as always, Phil Brown, joined with my regular co-host as always, Martin Warwick. As we lead up to the week of Premier League commencing, of course, first game up out of the gates is Friday, Manchester United v Leicester. Lots of stuff going on at those two football clubs. And I am delighted to be joined here with the magnificent, legendary, I don't know, my lexicon is exhausted trying to describe this icon of football, Martin Taylor. Martin, how you doing, pal?
Well, after an intro like that, I'm fine. Thank you very much. Nice to talk to you, both of you, Phil and Martin.
For someone who grew up watching the Premier League, of course, your voice is synonymous with English football as anybody else, so it is genuinely our pleasure. Martin, I know you wanted to go first, so I'll let you go ahead and throw the first question to Martin.
Yeah, Martin, just before we touch on the upcoming Premier League season, I just wanted to take a quick look back. Obviously, you were over in Russia for, 4 or 5 weeks, I believe, and you know, for me, all the fears that came along with that Russian World Cup, and from a fan's point of view, proved, you know, unfounded. And by all accounts, from the people we know and spoke to, it was just a fantastic event in all the host cities and was very well received around the world.
Well, can I add my name to the list of your friends that have said that to you? Because I agree totally with that. I guess we'll never quite know how Russia got the World Cup, and maybe it's just as well that we don't know. But what is unforgettable is the way they staged it. Not just the obvious organisation, which was spot on. The grounds were really good. One or two just got ready in time, I think. But clearly the investment there has paid dividends. The quality of the football on the pitches that were laid off, and new pitches were put down, and the players responded to the surroundings. So that kind of stuff you tend to expect a World Cup to deliver. What probably surprised us all was the warmth of the welcome, the delight, it seemed, for the rank and file in Russia, really, to mix with us rank and file of the world's media, to be able to exchange views, to exchange thoughts, even to discuss the politics of the world, which I'm not very good at doing, but it was a great opportunity to see how the other side of what's been painted as a divide for almost all my life, really. And I was there in Moscow in 1980 for the Olympics, which you might remember the US boycotted. But Great Britain went, and we went as British media. And it was stony-faced Soviet life that we faced then. And this time it was open-hearted. Welcome from particularly the younger people, for whom, of course, it's maybe a rare opportunity to see how we go about our daily business as well. So it all mixed perfectly, and the fact that the football was excellent, of course, just to put the icing on the cake, really. So splendid. Thank you, Russia, for doing it. I don't know what Russia's like now, 3 weeks after we've all come back. I hope some of the togetherness has brought maybe a change of thinking and broadened people's minds. It certainly broadened my mind about how life is in that country.
You've been to a number of World Cups, Martin. Obviously, this one was different in the sense that this was the first time we've used VAR technology. Mm. And it's a hotly contested topic. Some people like it, some people don't. I was for it, then against it, now I'm back for it, because I think it was excellent in the World Cup. I thought it justified its place. You've seen football change a lot over the years. What's your take on VAR, and how do you think it's going to impact football?
Well, I think it's something that's got to happen, and I think the World Cup has helped that. Whether in the end the game decides that maybe it's too much breaking up the play. It's got to be right, guys. There's no excuse. There's lots of excuses for officials to get things wrong in real time on the field. Different angles, interpretations, call it what you will. But when they look at the replays again, I mean, there was one in your city, I guess, involving Zlatan Ibrahimovic when he made his debut, when the world saw, and VAR should have seen, an offside goal, and because it was a dramatic goal for a dramatic player, it wasn't even considered, I don't think, when clearly everybody watching the reruns later on said it should have been ruled out. So you can't do that. You can't have mistakes. They have to get it right. But obviously, a human being's a human being. 99.9% of the time, I think VAR has to be right. And I think in Russia, maybe not quite reaching those stats, but more or less. The contentious one, of course, was in the final. And handball will always be contentious.
Yeah.
It always has been, whoever's judging it. And it's another opinion. I'm told that the referee wasn't brought to him that he got it wrong. He just didn't see it. So he went across to see it, and he made up his mind, and he gave the decision. Most of the ex-pros I spoke to in the aftermath of the final, well, not most of them, all of them said it shouldn't have been a penalty. And it changed the course of World Cup history, and there was no way, really. I think it was only in the first ever World Cup final that a team that was losing at halftime came back to win. So there wasn't much chance on the historical status for Croatia. I thought that was a bad call, an unnecessary call. And I don't think France would have been up in arms if it hadn't been given. So I think that was a shame, because I think for the rest it worked. We got good communication as commentators from the authorities. We had a monitor on a certain feed. They would tell us it would come up being reviewed. Well, that hasn't happened here in English football. It's not obviously not in the Premier League yet, but in the cup competitions. And I commentated for the World and the Community Shield. For the World sounds very grand, but for maybe even you in the USA got my feed. I don't know. It goes out as a guide commentary, if you like. And VAR, was it used? Was it not? I don't even know now, because there was nothing to tell me. The second goal for City might have been questioned about offside. I don't know, but we didn't know. So that can't be right. We have to pass on. We're just messengers in this. We should be given the message. And we were in the World Cup, but we haven't been so far here. So there's a lot of, I think, trimming to be done on it. But my view is, we have to go through the process, and if it doesn't work, then it'll be those who put it in place who failed, and we'll go on with life.
Yeah, I think the key word there was the interpretation of the rules, and I think there's so many grey areas, and it's so delicate now and definitive, like I suppose in the offsides and what is a handball, what isn't a handball, what's a dive, what's not a dive, you know, simulation, not simulation. So before we really nail down that side of it, it's still only going to be interpretation from another source upstairs. But yeah, we'll see where that goes. I mean,
I agree with you, Martin. And I would just add to that if they could simplify it and say it's just on matters of fact, was it in the penalty area,
exactly,
was it out of the
That's
penalty
my
area? And it's working brilliantly with the goal along the goal line. Is it a goal? Is it over the line? It's working brilliantly. That's a perfect example of how technology can help the game. But the more you leave one person's interpretation equals another person's interpretation, and on we go. And I think interpretation is best left to the man on the field, who does have the final say. We should stress that. It's always down to him, as it was in the World Cup final.
Yeah. Well, last thing on the World Cup before we move to Premier League comment here. I just want to know, what are your final thoughts on England? I mean, a lot of people obviously have said, you know, on looking back now, they beat who they were supposed to beat when they came up against the challenge, that they somewhat fell a little bit short. But I think it's a little different in when you get to a World Cup and you get to a major tournament. I don't really think there is necessarily easy games. I still think it's a young squad. To get to a semi-final, I think, is a huge success. And more than anything, you know, we had the whole football coming home. I think it did come home. I think the fans are closer to the national team than they have been in quite some time, and I think it's a bright future that Gareth Southgate has for that squad.
I couldn't agree with you more. I do agree, particularly with where you started, that there have been questions about what they achieved and how they achieved it as well. They predominance on playing for corners to score from set pieces and getting penalties from grabbing at set pieces, the powerhouse they did a fantastic amount of work on the training ground too, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. That's part of the game in England.
Part of the game,
brilliantly.
Yeah.
Yes, they, you know, They should have got to the final. There's no question about it. 1-0 up against Croatia, and really almost lulled into a sense of false security. Croatia offered nothing in that first hour, and then once they got the goal, they absolutely showed up England's failings. And that happens in football. And then I think the third and fourth place game probably was where they were so close to getting to the final, it was pretty hard to get up for the last game. And Belgium probably should have won it. They were good enough to win it, I think. Mm-hmm. And then the third place for them is not what fourth place is for England. England had no expectations, and they benefited from that. They also had wonderful PR. Gareth Southgate You know, management is a broad thing. Of course, it's about winning matches and getting tactics right on the field and picking the right sides. But in terms of representing the country, the management and the players were first class.
Yeah.
And you think that should happen all the time, but it doesn't. I mean, we're dealing with human beings. More experienced players don't perhaps like, you know, the commercial things that had to be done, the media. There was a lot of media involvement, and the players came over and you'll remember the series, The Likely Lads. Well, these were called the Likeable Lads, and I thought that was a wonderful way to describe them. And I've got some England assignments coming up, and I won't be going to pour cold water on what happened in Russia. But you're right, it's trying to build on it. They've given themselves a platform. They've made a huge difference. The feel-good factor waiting for the Premier League to start on Friday here is huge. Everybody's with the World Cup's just finished, we've had too much football. People are raring to go, and every one of those players who comes out for their club games at the weekend will get a terrific reception.
You've just mentioned that, Martin. Premier League is upon us here in a few days, and we're all delighted about that. But there's a couple of things I want to talk to you about. The transfer window, of course, has been brought forward, which I don't believe helps English clubs. We're now seeing, of course, the typical deadline day scrambling coming up, Manchester United trying to get deals done. What's your take on what's happened over the summer? Do you expect the same Manchester City to dominate? What's your take on what we're going to see this year in the Premier League?
Well, 24 hours ago, I saw Manchester City dominating at Wembley. And that was a pretty good marker. And what was interesting is that Kyle Walker, who came back to training on Wednesday, I think, last week, played the whole game. John Stones played all but the last 15 seconds, I think, and he'd only just come back and cut short his holiday. Benjamin Mendy was a World Cup winner with France, so he didn't play very much, but certainly was involved in all the build-up and all the physicality of it. He played the whole game. And one or two others, Maguero came back, and maybe he'd been back a little bit longer because I didn't get that far. But, you know, they all want to play. And why do they want to play? Well, because they know that if they lose their shirts, they might not get it back again. And that was a great compliment to Pep Guardiola, who might have just told the sports scientists, well, hang on a minute, it's only 3 weeks since they played at the last weekend of the World Cup. How much fitness have they lost being on holiday in that time? Not very much. Certainly, Callum Hudson-Odoi, who played for Chelsea, a 17-year-old, he tried to run Kyle Walker. Once or twice, he got half a yard on him, but was soon caught up. And in the end, Kyle had seen him off, really, and it looks superbly fit. So they'll be the team to beat. In terms of the transfers, well, we're all waiting for this sort of mini explosion to happen in the next 3 or 4 days, or 2 or 3 days now. And it's odd because obviously this is a self-imposed rule for the Premier League and for English clubs. And of course, the foreign clubs, you can sell to foreign clubs. So Chelsea could be in a position of not being able to bring in another goalkeeper with Thibaut Courtois going to somewhere in Spain, probably Real Madrid, after the English window's closed. So, you know, that I'm sure that won't happen. They'll be too clever to get caught boxed off like that. But it does seem, if everybody had agreed to this, I could see why they want it done before the Premier League starts, because the Premier League starts before La Liga and Serie A. And so the other countries are quite entitled to say, well, we don't want to do it now. Mm-hmm. So it's. I think some of the clubs are realising that maybe this wasn't such a good idea after all. But we'll see. We should evaluate it on Friday morning, I guess.
Martin, are you still there?
Yeah.
Well, on top of that, I was asking you for your predictions, Martin. Sorry, you cut out there. I was asking you for your predictions. Do we expect to see the same as what we saw last season? There's obviously massive turmoil going on at Old Trafford right now. You know, there's concerns about recruitment up there. Liverpool have recruited really, really well. Spurs doing their typical. You know, they haven't recruited anyone. They did this last season, of course, really up until the last day or two. They started to sign to Vincent Sanchez. But it hasn't been. Manchester United haven't recruited the way they would have hoped. What do you see happening at Old Trafford and at Anfield?
Well, I think you summed it up pretty well. I mean, Liverpool have recruited, it seems, very wisely, and they've done their business. They are an improving setup. They showed that last season. Don't forget, I think now, is it 3 times in a row they've beaten Manchester City in 2018,
yeah.
Which takes a bit of doing. Two of those in the Champions League, of course. And they are on paper, and I think maybe in terms of what they believe, the closest challengers at the moment. But Jose Mourinho is a wily fox, and if this this downturn in his mood is a bit of a charade to keep other people guessing, it wouldn't surprise me. He is a devious, and I mean that as a compliment, a devious manager who'll be plotting to try and make up the ground on Manchester City and not be overtaken by the likes of Liverpool. At the moment, it doesn't look fantastic for them, but... And you mentioned Spurs. That's interesting, because that last day, those dealings that you mentioned on the last day, of course, done after the season has started. This is why it's a good thing for the English clubs, really, they will have their players in place before that first league game. And that's why it's been moved forward, because I keep all the stats, you know, and you sometimes find somebody played one game for a club and then move one Premier League game for a club that you don't even associate them with, and then goes off and plays 32 games for another club. And you think, oh yeah, they did play one game for the start of the season when the plans were disrupted by a transfer. So there's no excuse for that happening now, really. So I think, you know, Liverpool look in very good shape. City obviously look in very good shape. Yes, Manchester United, publicly at least, are not putting up the most optimistic front. But Chelsea were off the pace yesterday, and they're less than just a month into their new manager. And obviously he's got a lot of work to do and not very much time to do it if he's going to recruit. As you say, Tottenham haven't brought in anybody. Arsenal, after 22 years of Arsene Wenger, are starting afresh. Yeah. And what's that going to be like under Unai Emery? He's a very organised coach, and no reason at all that he won't come up with something. But it's a huge thing to change the DNA of a club in a matter of weeks. So we await that. I'm at Arsenal on Sunday for the Manchester City game, and I really can't wait just to see what Arsenal look like after being Arsene Wenger's toys, I was going to say, but you know what I mean, boys, Arsene Wenger's boys for all those years. Most of those boys he started with are now in middle age, so he was there that long. So that's the fascinating part of it. My personal hope is that somebody comes out of the pack. I mean, Burnley very nearly did it last year to break into the top six. Leicester, of course, in 2016 astounded the world, charmed the world with the most amazing Premier League title win, which I keep reminding myself was by 10 clear points. They didn't just sneak across the line as ultimate underdogs, the Cinderellas of the Premier League. They won it by 10 clear points. Yeah. So they were very good that year. I think they lost only three games. So I hope that can happen. You know, I'm totally impartial. I just want to see excitement, and I'm greedy in that sense. And I've got, you know, my viewers to hopefully be entertained by what the coaches come up with.
I think also the teams coming up, I mean, Wolves, I think, are pretty equipped here and could provide a few upsets here. Wolves, I mean, I fancy them maybe to even push for that top eight.
Well, yeah, I think it's a good point. They obviously come well backed, and they've got good connections in the agents' world, so they get players that maybe wouldn't have gone to Wolves in the past. Fulham are interesting as well, and obviously a very fashionable part of London, and back in the Premier League with a bit more resources behind them than they had when they were in the Premier League before, and they're doing a lot of business. They've got Mitrovic back, who obviously was on loan from Newcastle. They've signed him. He played a huge part in their promotion from the Championship. And in the last couple of years, we've always said, oh, you know, the favourites to go down, the teams that come up, and maybe the bookmakers will make them the same. But I think the teams that have come up recently have stayed up. And that puts the fear of God into the teams in the lower half of the table the season before, because, you know, they feel that they're not just going to get teams that they perhaps should beat coming in, and they're going to get teams that might finish above them, and that could be very bad news.
What about yourself, Martin? I don't know how many years is this you've been broadcasting now. What about yourself? Like, you still have the same hunger for this that you always did? You still see yourself doing this for another 10 years? Do you have an end in sight? Or is your hunger still the same as it always was?
Well, I hope it's come through in this conversation, guys, because I do. I regard myself as the luckiest person in the world. I get to see this game that I'm obsessed with, and there are so many millions of people obsessed with it, rightly so. It's a fantastic form of sport with great values for the world as well as for the sport itself. You know, the ethic of being in a team and not one person getting above himself. You've got to be successful as a group and do it all together. And I love that kind of approach to life anyway. And I hope it keeps me young, being around young people, young players. And you know, I'm always a bit surprised when they come up and talk to me because they know what I do, and I try and have the right kind of vocabulary. I think I work on the English version of the FIFA computer game, you know. Yes. And I think a lot of the young players come in as very good performers. They're very good performers in the real sport, but in that sport as well. So we have a starting off point for conversations, and you know, they're great people, footballers. They sometimes do get maybe a bit of bad press through, mm-hmm. through somebody letting the group down, but generally they are wonderful people. They are people who have given up so much. I mean, you know, we know they get paid an extraordinary amount of money, but they do, these are the best years of their lives, and the sacrifices they make in terms of lifestyle are huge, really.
Yep.
And they can go through, I don't know, from probably being when they really get into professional clubs at 11, 12 years old, right through to their mid-30s, where their lifestyle is dictated by being successful at a sport we love watching them perform. So I'm a big champion of the players, and hopefully there's still a connection there despite my advancing years.
Well, you're synonymous with this sport, like I said, Martin, as anybody else. I often think that great commentators become as much a part of the event as the event itself. I remember Clive Tilsley in 99. I can't imagine thinking of Manchester United winning a European Cup final without thinking of Clive Tilsley. And I think great commentators have a way of handling the moment that makes sure that we never forget it, and the commentary becomes as much a part of that. And I'm sad to say that the Sergio Aguero commentary is something
you were clearly on the wrong end of that. But it's fascinating, because I was at Wembley yesterday, and who scored the goals again? I seem to be wherever I go, he goes and scores.
stay away from Old Trafford then.
Yes, the United City game. Martin, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and share your wonderful point of view with us. And we look forward to another season of you commentating and creating unforgettable moments. And thank you so much, Martin, for being such a gentleman. We really
appreciate it. Thank you.
It's a pleasure, and I really appreciate you asking me to share some time with you. Good luck with the show.
Thanks, Martin. See you, mate. Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.